This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Frank Stachow, filling in for Neil Conan in Washington. In the 1980s, one of Ronald Reagan's budget directors famously proposed that ketchup be reclassified as a vegetable in order to cut costs in school lunch programs. School lunch menus have come a long way since then. Federally funded programs guarantee cafeteria food has to have some nutritional value. But with childhood obesity an increasing problem, some school districts are taking more dramatic steps, even getting more creative despite increasingly tight budgets. This week, one vision for the future of the school cafeteria is in flower on the National Mall as part of the Smithsonian Institution's annual Folklife Festival. Senators, policymakers, and visitors to the Capitol are sitting down to take part in the Edible Schoolyard. It's the brainchild of Alice Waters, owner of the acclaimed California restaurant Chez Panisse and originator of the West Coast style of cooking that emphasizes fresh produce and culinary craft. Pilot program launched in a junior high school in Berkeley. Students grow the fruits and vegetables that they will then prepare and eat together. This hour we'll talk with Alice Waters about her edible schoolyard and check in around the country on what other schools and districts are doing to raise the profile in the school cafeteria. Later, a look ahead at President Bush's speech tonight. He's expected to talk about the course of the war in Iraq and the reminders of the much older conflict. We will take you to the English Channel later in the program, where Lord Nelson waits atop his tall ship to reenact the Battle of Trafalgar. Right now, though, improving school lunches. If you're a school administrator, how do you balance the school budget and manage to provide a balanced diet for students? We'd also like to hear from parents who, and those of you who are still in the classroom. Are you satisfied with the school lunch menus? How about those tater tots? Our number here in Washington, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email address TOTN@NPR.org. With us in Studio 3A is Alice Waters, the woman behind the Edible Schoolyard Project. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
The Edible Schoolyard, tell us more.
Well, I came here with an idea. And we have planted it out there on the mall. And it's an idea about edible education. We realized quite some time ago that our kids were not eating around the dinner table like we had done as children, and in fact most kids are not sitting down to any meals with their families anymore. And it means a lot of things. It means that they're out there sort of fending for themselves and eating from the likes of fast food restaurants. Now, they're not only eating that food, which may or may not be good for them, but they're eating the ideas and the values that come along with that food. So they're finding out that, or they're believing that food should be cheap and it should be available 24 hours a day and that it's okay to waste. There's more where that came from. And that there's a very narrow range of things that you should be eating, and they should be the same wherever you are in the world. They should be the same. And in fact, Cokes and chips and all of that is actually good for you. Well, it's not only impacting the health of our kids, but it's impacting the environment and our culture. And we're losing all the way around. And so I think what we need to do is go back to the public school system, our last truly democratic institution. Every child goes to school. And we need to bring in this idea, the way that we brought physical education into the school system when we had a physical fitness crisis back there in the 60s. We wanted every kid to take physical education. And we built gymnasiums and we built tracks and we got teachers and we gave them uniforms and they got graded for taking physical education. Well, now we have this obesity crisis and environmental crisis and cultural crisis, and we need to make school lunch an academic subject, a real subject in the school.
So it sounds like what you're saying is that this is a holistic process. This eating is not what you do when you're not in class. This eating is what you do as part of a socialization process in which learning can take place and without which there is no learning.
And this can be a delicious course that you're taking, because we're imagining it as an interactive time frame. And because we've been doing this experiment at the Edible Schoolyard in Berkeley for the last 10 years, and we know from that kids like this.
But you're really spending time, and you've got a garden, the kids are growing.
That's right.
They're spending time with, I mean, how much time are they spending out of the classroom and in the garden?
But it becomes the classroom. Mm-hmm. That's what happened. You may be your math class may be out there in the garden, and you're measuring flower beds. You're working out seed rotations. Maybe you're in the kitchen classroom, and you're studying Egyptian history, and you're preparing the food.
So you're integrating basic skills classes around the science and the technology of growing, and then all that goes into
cooking. We wanted to meet all the academic standards. I mean, you may be sitting down to lunch, and it may be part of a guidance class, only it's a much more comfortable place to talk about what's happening in your life.
And I'm assuming, too, that you're using organic techniques now to grow the food?
Well, I think that's all a part of it, because we're trying to teach our children to take care of the land. And we're trying to teach them about conservation and what is really wholesome and good for you. And we have to begin with nutrition in the ground. In the ground.
Now, but you're talking about, and also healthy foods here. How do these kids take to losing their Twinkies?
The great thing about it is we don't tell them you're not eating the Twinkie. We just bring them into a new relationship with food. And when they grow it, and when they cook it, they eat it. And it doesn't matter whether it is chard or you know, little salads or rice and beans. They really like it because they're engaged in the whole process.
Let's go to the phones and take a call right now. Kurt is on the line from Buffalo, New York. Hello, Kurt.
How are you? Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I'm a health teacher and also the liaison with the school chef, as they call him. And I just wanted to make the comment that and bring it into the perspective of the lower income students in the lower income some urban areas around the country. In these urban areas, approaching 80 to 85% of the students are often on a free lunch program. And if our senators and congressmen were aware that the government, in a sense, is providing access for the students to become unhealthy, that will eventually rebound into significant health costs, you know, with the childhood obesity by providing low-quality food at lunch, it might make a little bit of economic sense to them. And they're reasonable, intelligent people, obviously, in office. And if they realize that since we are the ones providing the food, sometimes both breakfast and lunch for many of the lower-income students, if we only offered a healthier fare, eventually, at first, they'd probably vote with their feet and stay out of the cafeteria, but eventually their parents would say, sorry, eat what's there, and they would eat what's there, and both they would be acquiring a taste for healthier food, A, and B, the government, in a sense, wouldn't be contributing to the higher health care costs that are going to be rebounding out of this obesity epidemic 20 or 30 years from now. So the government has more power. I know regulation is a nasty word, but if the government, in a sense, regulated what is served, especially in the lower income areas, then we could be force feeding, literally, if you don't mind the pun, a partial solution to this problem.
All right, Kurt, thanks for the call. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Well, the idea of this project really is to feed every single child in school breakfast, lunch, and an afternoon snack. It's really, we don't leave any child behind here. They're all engaged because this is part of the core curriculum. If we upgrade the lunchroom, the cafeterias with better food, only the kids who know about that are going to participate. The kids who need it the most are going to be eating before school and after school, just putting it in their backpacks. So this is not an answer for you know, the upgrading of the cafeteria. It's all good. It's all to the good. But I think that's why we need to take it out of maintenance, this feeding, and put it into academia.
I want to bring in someone who may have a different perspective in this conversation. Jennifer Obakume is a student at Inglewood High School in Southern California. She's a reporter for Youth Radio, and she's with us now at NPR West in Culver City. Welcome to the show, Jennifer. Jennifer, not there yet? We will talk with her in a moment. Michael's question, Kurt's question in Buffalo raised another point, and I want to ask you if you've done any cost comparisons. I mean, what does it cost to raise, you know, just in pure dollar?
Well, it's going to cost more. But, I mean, the question is, do we want to pay up front?
Yes.
Or do we want to pay out back? I think we need pay up front and really make a program that is beautiful and delicious and comprehensive.
And comprehensive. You know, I'm guessing that Jennifer is on the line now. Hello, Jennifer.
Hello.
You've been listening to the conversation, I think, with Alice Waters. Have you heard about this, the edible schoolyard? What do you think about this idea of eating a little more healthy and having more involvement in making and eating your food?
You know, to tell you the honest truth, I do believe Miss Waters is doing a very good thing. It is a very good idea. Why couldn't politicians think of it before? I mean, in Inglewood, like one of your colleagues, Kurt, was talking about, Inglewood is a low-income area. And we do have reduced food prices. We do have free lunch. But what most people are not pointing the direction at is that the food quality, I mean, fish sticks are supposed to crunch. They're not supposed to feel like rubber you could mm-hmm. shake a stick at, you know, or soggy sandwiches. It's all in a point to make students healthier.
Well, we have just a brief moment before we go to break here. I want to get a quick comment from Alice about preparing the food if you're more engaged in the growing process. Doesn't that change too?
Oh, absolutely. But we want the kids to be part of the process of planning the meals that they have in their cafeterias.
I bet those fish sticks might taste a little better if you caught the darn thing. We'll hear more about the nutritionary and culinary quality of school lunches after our break. Give us a call at 800-989-TALK. Send us an email at totn@npr.org. I'm Frank Stacio on Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Frank Stacio. Neil Conan is away. Well, most likely, if you have school-age kids, they're home for the summer by now, and for a few months, you get to play a bigger role in what they eat for lunch. But come September, your kids return to the world of mystery meat, tater tots, and red vegetable known as ketchup in some administrations. The school districts around the country are trying to change the reputation of the school cafeteria with programs ranging from gourmet chefs to online accounts that allow parents to see what their kids are ordering. Is your school district trying to improve its nutrition? Have the obstacles been too high? We especially want to hear from school administrators, teachers, parents. Well, I guess we want to hear from the kids, too. How's lunch going these days? And are there proposals to change the way kids eat at lunch at school? Our number is 800-989-TALK, email address totn@npr.org. Our guest this hour, Alice Waters, is with us. She's the founder of Chez Panisse Restaurant and the creator of the concept of the edible schoolyard. And Jennifer Obakume is with us. She's a finishing junior at Inglewood High School in Southern California. And as I say, we're taking your calls. Jennifer, just before the break, you were talking about kind of the quality of food, you know, and how you'd like to have some better quality stuff. But tell us about your lunch habits. What do you generally have for lunch?
I tell you, okay, at our school, you know, you have foods that come, foods go. When I was a freshman there, I used to eat breakfast every once and again. And at lunch, you know, it would be ordered from the cafeteria. You actually had Domino's, pizza, and Subway being delivered. So that's where most of my money would go. And then there were soda machines on campus. In 10th grade, my food habits at school started to shift the other way. And so now at the end of this school year, I really haven't eaten that much at school. I mean, why? There's nothing there.
Hmm. Do kids talk much about the food? I mean, do you get a sense that kids in high school are aware of the fact that the junk they're eating, albeit it may taste good, it might be more available, but they kind of have a sense this stuff isn't good for you?
I think they do, but also, low-income area, the food isn't as good as it could be. you know, even though the prices, it may be hard for school districts, but come on, you know, health is important. We all sit there, we buy this, and, you know, it's just those days where you really don't want it, but you have no other alternative. You're going to eat what you've got, or you eat nothing at all, you know. And that's what I've reduced myself to, eating nothing at all as far as school goes.
Have you agitated at all for a change in your school? Is anybody doing that?
There's only so much. Only so much you can do.
Well, Jennifer, have a good summer. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Jennifer Obakume is a reporter for Youth Radio, just finished her junior year at Inglewood High School in California, and joined us from the studios of NPR West in Culver City, California. Is there much resistance, Alice Waters, to promoting these kind of programs? Have you been to other schools? What do they think of the idea?
Well, it's rather extraordinary. Everybody who comes into the program to see the program, and we must have 1,000 visitors a year, whether they be parents or student groups, legislators, everybody who comes in and sees it realizes how right it is to see kids gathered around the table, sharing food that looks beautiful. They have, you know, a conversation at the table. When they see the kids working in the garden, they just, you know, some kids who have never been out in the garden and are there for the first time growing something that they can make a salad with.
So I'm imagining the school administrator looking at this scene and then shaking their heads and say, Alice, I'd love to do this, but...
Exactly. That's exactly what they say.
But what?
Well, I think we are planting the seeds for this much bigger idea all around the country. I mean, this has to be an initiative that is paid for by the federal government, the local government, and the city government. It's not something that can be a private partnership like our model there is in Berkeley, California. And we need to make good models strategically in other states around this country. But one thing that we can do right now is there is a wellness policy that is being developed, nutrition and wellness policy, that every school is going to have to propose in order to get it federally funded, the school lunch program federally funded. So we need to draw up a document about the philosophy of food and nutrition and get people to go to their schools and make this happen at the grassroots level.
Well, other states have tried to take on the problem. They've come up with various solutions for students who subsist on junk food. The New Jersey school system, for instance, has just become an unfriendly place. This month, the state of New Jersey outlawed the worst snack food offenders from its cafeterias and vending machines. New guidelines take effect in 2007. Joining us now is Charles Guperis. He's the Secretary of Agriculture for the state of New Jersey. He's with us by phone from his home in Sussex County, New Jersey. Welcome to the program, Charles.
Thanks for having me.
What effect do you think these changes are going to have in New Jersey?
Well, in many ways, there are schools that are actively implementing our model nutrition policy now. In fact, we announced it in Essex County, and Pat Johnson, the food service coordinator there, is actively making sure that she's implementing the policy and having a relatively easy time of it.
So the idea is catching on a bit. Was there much resistance at first?
Well, you know, just to tell you a little bit about how our regulations came into being, it's been a very transparent process. And so, and regulations, of course, require public comment. But before you start with the public comment period, you use the best science available to determine what the different standards in the policy should be. And then we announced it and invited the public to comment on it. And we've had favorable comments, and we had people with questions. And, of course, we had people that, questioned the policy as well. But by and large, we see a growing and an overwhelming support, groundswell of support for doing this in New Jersey schools.
I want to put a question to Alice Waters at this point about whether you think this is a gradual kind of a process. Do you see what's happening in New Jersey as a step toward more widespread acceptance of what you're doing?
Absolutely. All of these things that are happening in the schools, the banning of vending machines and planting of gardens, are all part of a much bigger picture.
800-989-8255 is the number to call if you want to join our program. And let's see, Lisa's on the line from Tulsa. Hello, Lisa.
Hi there.
Do you have a question for us?
Well, yeah. I'm an ex-restaurateur from Seattle who actually left the restaurant business to become a farmer in Oklahoma. Mm. And, Alice, you have always been my inspiration, so it's quite an honor to talk to you. But why I called was because in Seattle, around the corner from my restaurant, was a school called Orca, and it's an alternative school. And they have planted a wonderful garden, and they've had it for years. And each student is able to go in and learn how to grow. And they, I don't know necessarily that they eat what they grow in that type of, you know, school cafeteria type environment, but they actually sell it at the farmers market, which is amazing. And just that these kids are in there doing it, having an interest, just totally gives me faith. You know, in that particular school and in the children, that they do have an interest. And right. If we would only just give them the opportunity for that type of experience, you know, I think it would be a great benefit to us all.
Well, thanks for the call, Lisa. Do you know how much this is going on elsewhere, Alice?
Oh, it's everywhere. It's in every state in this country. And as I said, in terms of garden programs and just sort of health awareness that's happening, I think we can all come together, and I'm hoping this sort of national school lunch initiative can be born.
Charles Couperus in New Jersey, do you know that there are other efforts to improve lunches and lunch menus even further? Getting the junk food out is kind of one step. Anything else happening in New Jersey to move
things
along?
Well, we're on a constant quest to make sure that, you know, the school lunch, the five-component school lunch meal is, you know, a high-quality, nutritious meal. And we've tested, you know, individual districts to make sure they meet the standards that USDA has set for that. But often what we've saw is they just bypassed that meal and you know, picked up something on the a la carte line or out of a vending machine, you know, a high sugar, a high fat or sugary snack. And we want to really focus on, you know, a good, nutritious, well-balanced meal. And that's our focus in many ways. And so, you know, when a student is taught nutrition in the classroom, we most certainly want to make sure what's offered in the schools and the school cafeteria is nutritious as well.
Well, more and more students are taking an active role in that debate and that effort to bring nutrition into the schoolhouse. Miriam Archibong is a recent graduate from Grady High School in Atlanta, Georgia. During her time there, she convinced her high school to include vegetarian options on the lunch menu. Miriam is also a reporter for Youth Radio. She joins us by phone from Atlanta. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, how are you?
We're fine. I speak for all of us. How did you make the case to school officials that the vegetarian option should be offered?
Well, I started off as a student body president of my school, and my duties was to read the school lunch menu. And from looking at the high caloric value and high fat intake of the meal options, I kind of was devastated by that. And so I started a vegetarian club, and we kind of formulated some ideas about how we can better the school lunch options. And I talked to my school principal, and he directed me to our school's private food provider. I also talked to the Atlanta Public School Board about how vegetarianism tends to be a lot healthier than an omnivorous diet and how it could decrease obesity. Both people took it, i.e. the Atlanta School Board and our private food provider, and they gave us our own lunch line, and our school was a pilot school, and Because it works so well, approximately 200 students a day ate from the lunch line, vegetarian and non-vegetarian, that they plan on adding more schools in the Atlanta Public School System to the board, to join on board.
How many kids are eating vegetarian now?
Approximately 200 students at my school ate vegetarian lunches.
Oh, I see. I thought that you meant that was the total. You mean 200 out of the total went vegetarian. How many kids were involved with you in getting this change?
It was a small handful. Mm-hmm. It was about 10 students.
And how big a groundswell did you think you have? You now know you have 200. Did you think there'd be that many students who'd be interested?
I definitely did not think that many students would be eating from the lunch line. I didn't know. I thought that maybe about 20 students, because when they asked me, Sodexo was like, you know, how many students do you think we should make lunches for? And I was like, probably about 30.
Uh-huh. That's so if the option's available, what about what's happening in New Jersey, where they've simply banished snack foods and junk food? I mean, do you think schools should go that far? Should they simply not have that option available?
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because I don't necessarily believe that they should take such drastic measures to decrease obesity. I think that a great idea would be to do something like they do in Europe. I think one thing that we've forgotten in America is that the cafeteria is quite similar to the dining room, where when people go to the dining room table, families, when they sit down and they eat, they tend to talk about, you know, what's going on today, you know, how to act, what you should be eating, what you shouldn't be eating. And in Europe, the teachers tend to eat lunches with the students, whereas in America, the teachers tend to go to the teacher lunchroom, and they don't necessarily care about what you're eating. In Austria, for example, the teachers have the opportunity to tell their students, you know, hey, Samantha, you've eaten two cookies, you know, and you haven't eaten your broccoli, so mm-hmm. maybe you should think about that. And I think that would be a good idea to have the teachers come join lunch with the students.
Of course, at that point, you're going to have the kids go into the teacher's lunchroom to get away from the teachers. Miriam, thank you very much for being
you're
with
welcome.
Us. Miriam Archibong is a recent graduate from Grady High School in Atlanta, Georgia, as well as a reporter for Youth Radio. She joined us by phone from Atlanta. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Frank Stachow, sitting in for Neil Conan. My guest today, Alice Waters, who is founder of the Edible Schoolyard, and Charles Couperus is the Secretary of Agriculture for the state of New Jersey. We're talking about healthy lunch options today and asking you to join the conversation. Terry's on the line from Richmond. Hi, Terry.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
I'm in college at VCU studying to be a phys ed / health teacher. I'm 25 years old, and when I remember back to when I was in elementary school in health class, you know, there was very little emphasis on nutritional education. It was all about the muscular, skeletal, organ systems. And then there was, like, family life and sex ed, and then the sports section of it. And, you know, I guess my question, similar to what the last caller proposed in her school, you know, along with these programs like the Edible Schoolyard, which, as far as I can see, are still far outnumbered by the typical lunch programs that may be sponsored by Coca-Cola and McDonald's, when might the emphasis actually shift to include a more holistic and nutritional education from a younger age, like maybe on a larger scale or on a national scale?
Well, Charles Couperus, not fair to make you be the spokesman for that question, but I'll ask you as the Agriculture Secretary in New Jersey if that kind of thing is under consideration.
Well, you know, part of our, you know, the nutrition initiative that we did in New Jersey was an outgrowth of what we call the Healthy Choices, Healthy Kids Initiative. And at its core was, you know, making sure that we eat right and move more. And I believe that is a more holistic approach. But nutrition education is important as well. And already, you know, our education core curriculum has been amended to require nutrition education. And, you know, and the whole, you know, in the Department of Agriculture, we only can administer what we have the authorities to administer. So our responsibility was school nutrition. And so we're doing that. But we understand that it is only a component of an overall holistic approach to a healthy lifestyle and a healthy student.
Terry, thank you for your call. Alice Waters is the socialization process that Maria was talking to us about earlier. Is really part of the process you're talking about as well.
Well, I think these kids are hungry for good food, but they're really hungry for someone to care about them. And when you put kids into that environment of the cafeteria – and you compare that to the nearest mall, you realize they're more important in this society as consumers than they are as students. And I want to make a cafeteria that's a beautiful place, that where the teachers will want to eat with the students, where they can be engaged in the serving of this food themselves, where they take pride in it, that it's a lot more than just getting the food to the table or into their mouths. It's a whole way of thinking about food in balance with culture.
Alice Waters, thank you. And if you want to see more about Alice Waters Edible Schoolyard and you happen to be on the National Mall in Washington this weekend, you can do that. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Charles Cupera, Secretary of Agriculture for the State of New Jersey, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
When we come back, a look at the Battle of Trafalgar. I'm Frank Stacio. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.